Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, Chapter 7, The Lord's Tour of South India, Text 95. Matasinapraya Prabhu Karila Brahman Premavesha Jajakari Namasankitam. Almost like a mad lion, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went on his tour filled with ecstatic love and performing sankirtan, chanting Krishna's names as follows. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Roksamon. Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Raksamam. Krishna, Kesava, Krishna, Kesava, Krishna, Kesava, Pahimam. That is, O Lord Krishna, please protect me and maintain me. He also chanted, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Raksamam, Krishna, Kesava, Krishna Kesava, Krishna Kesava, Krishna Kesava, Paimam. That is, O Lord Ram, descendant of King Rahu, please protect me. O Krishna, O Kesava, killer of the Kesi demon, please maintain me. Ishloka Padipate Chalilabura Hari Loka Deke Pate Kahe Bala Hai Hai. Chanting this verse, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, known as Gaura Hari, went on his way. As soon as he saw someone, he would request him to chant Hari Hari. Sei loka prema matahaya bala Hari Krishna Prabhur pache shanghe jaja darshana satrishna. Whoever heard Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chant Hari Hari also chanted the holy name of Lord Hari and Krishna. In this way, they all followed the Lord, very eager to see him. Katak sanarahi prabhu tarangiya vitaya karile tare shakti sanchariya. After some time, the Lord embraced these people and bid them return home, having invested each of them with spiritual potency. Purport. In his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura explained that this spiritual potency is the essence of the pleasure potency and the knowledge potency. By these two potencies, one is empowered with devotional service. Lord Krishna himself, or his representative, the unalloyed devotee, can mercifully bestow these combined potencies upon any man. Being thus endowed with such potencies, one can become an unalloyed devotee of the Lord. Anyone favored by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was empowered with this bhakti shakti. Thus the Lord's followers were able to preach Krishna consciousness by his divine grace. So Lord Chaitanya was the first 24 years of his life in family life. First as a child, growing up, and then in married life. But at age 24, he took sannyas, and shortly after his sannyas, began a tour of South India, sannyas was a remarkable change in his life. The first part of his life, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was hiding his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was in that way not known. However, in the last 1.5 years of that household ashram, he was revealing to some devotees his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it still remained hidden for most. to most people, he appeared to be a great devotee. It was in those last years before his sannyas in Navadvip that he began to publicly display.
There's some.
Can that incense
go out or go away?
He was in that period. He began to reveal first his identity as a devotee. He began to act like a devotee, and then he revealed his identity as the Supreme Lord as well. So the final pastimes in Navadvip are very ecstatic times when everyone is absorbed in chanting and dancing with the devotees the whole night in the house of Srivas. But as Karvikarnapur describes it, one devotee got a little tired the whole night. The kirtan continued, and he became very, very tired. And at that time, he decided to take a little rest in the house. So he found a quiet spot in the house, took some rest. And when he woke up, everyone was gone. So he was the last one to go out from the house into the street. And then he met another devotee there and said, "Oh," the devotee said, the Lord is gone, you know. He said, "Yes, everyone is gone, right? Said, yeah, everyone's gone from the house." But the devotee meant, "No, the Lord is gone. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gone to take sannyas." It said the devotees, they would have died in separation. They would have died, but they didn't do so because they were living by the rope of hope. What if he would come back? Imagine, they would have died and he would come back. That would have been too much. So they didn't die, but yet we're on the edge, on the verge. Well, the sannyas ceremony in itself was also quite a depressed scene, one must say, because here was this very extremely brilliant, handsome personality with beautiful long hair, and he was going to shave. The barber who was supposed to shave him couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. But somehow or other, his hand did it. His hand did it anyway, although he himself had no... He didn't want to. After somehow or other, he shaved Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That was it. He gave up the profession as a barber. He became a sweet maker. It is said the hair of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is placed in a samadhi and kept there in the city of Katwa. And later, when the barber left his body in due time, he was placed in samadhi next to the hair. You can still see those two samadhis in Katwa. It was the place where Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. And then, so during the entire ceremony of sannyas, everyone was very kind of depressed and sad and shocked that he was really going through with it. Such a young man in the prime of his life. How could he do it? Terrible. And then, at the very end of the ceremony, suddenly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now feeling completely liberated from social convention, no longer feeling obliged to kind of adjust to what other people wanted from him, felt for the first time that he was free to just express who he was. And all the love of God that he had been hiding all that time, it just burst forth from his heart, and he just jumped up and began dancing in great ecstasy. And an ecstatic kirtan developed, and everyone, just from the deepest, darkest gloom, suddenly transformed into just a wave of ecstasy. It was like, it was even more ecstatic because of the contrast. Anyway, this wave of ecstasy swept up everyone beyond beyond themselves. Everyone lost it. Even Kesava Bharati, who was the sannyas guru, right? He was a Mayavad sannyasi, but even he just became totally swept up in the whole thing and totally ecstatic. And so it was an extraordinary event. And after that, it continued. The same sort of kirtan happened again. These kind of ecstasies that swept up everyone and drove everyone beyond themselves. And that is how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to travel through South India. It is said that at the time there was really nothing else, because there was not a movement as such. It was just Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu alone. See, now we can see that there's something. Like here in New York, there are some places where you can connect. You can go and you can connect. You can go to the Bhakti Center. You can connect to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's tradition, if you so desire. But there was no tradition that he was representing. He was just ecstatic. And he was certainly teaching from the Vedic literatures. That much he was representing. But that wasn't extraordinary, because everyone did that. That was society. Everyone followed the Vedas. So that wasn't like a great revelation. Maybe in New York that would be something, you know, oh, Vedas, interesting, but not in India, where everyone 500 years ago, where Vedic culture was very, very strong. Yeah. That was just, all right. So in that way, there was, although people became affected, very much affected by his presence, they didn't quite know exactly what they were part of. Rather, it was a force, just the force of the kirtan that took over. And it said it drove people beyond themselves. They became totally ecstatic from being in kirtans with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Afterwards, they would return to their village, and the whole village got turned on. Everyone was, the whole village would just go ecstatic. And in kirtan, there was no external explanation following the kirtan. There was no book with it. You know, did you get the book? No, they get the book. You know, I mean, you know, after the experience, you can get the book which tells you what it's all about. Yeah. No, there was nothing. There were no books. It's like there were no books. Okay, well, where do I go when I want to experience a bit more of this? Nowhere. There's no place. I mean, there must be a place somewhere. No, there was no place. There were no books. Nothing. Does he have any followers? No, he doesn't. Any disciples or something like that? No, he didn't have at the time. He was just alone with his ecstasy. And that alone, that ecstasy, was entering into the hearts of people. And that ecstasy immediately awoke transcendental knowledge, a transcendental experience there. Because it is said that every living being by nature is anandamaya vyasat, or pleasure seeking. Doesn't matter which living being it is, but every living being is looking for some pleasure somewhere. That's what makes us tick. And then the question is, where do we find it? Or where do we think we find it? So we are influenced by the illusory energy, and therefore looking for pleasure in the wrong things. We think we'll find it in material things, in wealth, in beauty, in all kinds of physical enjoyment, you name it. We think we find it there, and we chase after it. But it doesn't really satisfy the heart. It is described that when the soul enters into the material body, that basically the original function of the soul, or the symptom of the soul, is consciousness. That is the symptom of the soul, the symptom of life. That consciousness is manifesting itself through thinking, feeling, and willing. So this thinking, feeling, and willing is something that happens originally on the platform of the soul. But when the soul enters into the body, the soul goes into a dormant state. That's not just happened recently, that happened the first time we went into a material body, which is a long time ago, because we had many, many bodies since we are here now. Anyway, the soul is in a dormant state as long as it's materially embodied, and then the mind takes over thinking, feeling, and willing. So now we're thinking, feeling, and willing with the mind. And the mind is misdirecting this thinking, feeling, and willing. And therefore, all these experiences don't really touch us so deep. Somehow or other, it leaves us, whatever little drops of happiness we get, doesn't satisfy. Everything we tried, still unfulfilled, never fulfilled, trying everything possible, unfulfilled. So, however, spiritual activity, devotional activity, awakens the soul, and with it, a sense of fulfillment. Now, in our case, because the dose that we are getting is not as intense as the dose that people were getting right there in the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? We may have kirtan and everyone nods their head, some rhythm, some are tapping, and sort of like some are getting in the mood, whatever it may be, it definitely affects us. And it may even give us strength, it may give us inspiration, it may give us ability to carry on the practice of bhakti yoga in a more serious way. But we're not just going beyond ourselves. But when the Supreme Lord personally appears and he does kirtan, it's on another level. It's on another level than what we've ever experienced in this world. So everyone just immediately was propelled to a level of being awakened. Although they didn't quite understand what was happening, but they were being awakened. So this awakening is here described as empowerment, and that empowerment is described not as material empowerment, you know, like you empower someone with skills and then, you know, give him the reins, you know, now you take, you know, you do it, yes, I'm empowered, I'm doing it. Not that kind of empowerment. We're speaking here about true empowerment, real happiness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining empowerment means empowerment with knowledge and empowerment with happiness, or with the chit potency and with the ananda potency. Basically, to see it more simple, it means that the spiritual identity is awakening. That when the soul is dormant, it's also our spiritual identity is dormant. We don't know who we really are. Whatever we are is false. False identification. That birth that we took now is one out of many. And that place, the place of our birth, the ground that we kiss, that we love, it's false. It's not us. That which is part of you is not you at all. It's hard. I mean, like, I give this lecture, but I'm quite convinced that I'm Dutch. And, you know, And it's a particular spirit, right? Rebellious, stubborn, right? Extremely individualistic, right? Not a team player, right? Not at all. Hate teams. You have to be with a whole team. Kind of just do it alone. Leave me alone. Let me just do it my way. Dutch, in short. Yeah. What can I say? And I like it, you know. I like to be Dutch. It's not just that I think I'm Dutch. I even like it. What to do? So it's kind of, what shall I say? It's a bit contradictory to, on the one hand, speak about that this identity and identification is completely false, and on the other hand, liking it, right? Liking to be, Dutch. Sorry for that. What to do? But these people who were Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were in one moment just like a rocket shot to another level. They were just experiencing real ecstasy, not just like wow, you know, not just wow, but I mean, in our vocabulary, right, wow is sort of the ultimate level of ecstasy that we can express, right? Seisha, who traveled with me yesterday, came on wow air. Was it wow? It was. Eh? But the level of ecstasy that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just shared with all these people took them immediately to the spiritual platform. To the full spiritual platform, something where we rarely penetrate, something where even seasoned practitioners rarely go, where for us it's like a clouded sky, and sometimes just suddenly there's a little bit of clear sky and some sunlight is shining through, a moment of transcendence. A moment of, like, for once, not identifying with the, you know, with the bodily world, the physical world, with our particular identity that we picked up just recently when we took birth. Yes, and of course we carry some identity from previous births as well. It's not only from now, because the last birth is also still there, and the births before and so on, in the subconscious, still influencing us. Maybe someone was aristocracy in France, and therefore still the hand is, the gestures are still there. Maybe you see it, but it doesn't. It was just a life in France, basically, and it's still in the hand, like this. Yeah, you may not, but it's really true, it is like that. Even an animal may still be there. I mean, sometimes I was sitting in meetings, and the things you do in meetings, I mean, the drawings you make out of blocks and grass and things like this, sitting in meetings can be extreme torture. So I was sitting in meetings and I started to look in people what animal was still present in them from a previous birth, if you know what I'm trying to explain. Huh? In a previous life, really, some lives back, we all were animals, right? You know, some a few lives back, some only very recently. Right? And you can still see some traces sometimes. So,
when the meeting was very boring, I would just look, you know, come to some interesting conclusions, which I'm not sharing this evening in public, but just the idea. Anyway, what I wanted to say is normally we are following a process of bhakti yoga, and through that process of bhakti yoga, gradually there is a transformation. And part of that transformation is, it's twofold. One, it says it deals with two types of qualities come about in this transformation. One is known as the temporary qualities that we acquire in this world, and the other one is dealing with fundamental qualities. Temporary qualities called tatastha lakshana, and the other one is swarup lakshana. So the temporary qualities is what I have been describing now, what you pick up for a life, and then it's over, and then you pick up new qualities for another life and carry something with you. And with it, certain characteristics. Someone has an anger issue, and I count to ten, I have seen people hitting the wall until their hands were bleeding, and I go like, what did you do that for? They do it themselves. They get angry, and it gets, if they don't hit the wall, I don't know what else they would do, so maybe it is good that they hit the wall. But the point is, these are temporary issues. These kind of issues are things we pick up on the way in the material world. Some imbalance, anger, or as Jung says it, a swollen ego or a shrunken ego. Like a swollen ego, big-headed, so many macho qualities, you name it, or, you know, a shrunken ego. People. All these things we may pick up, life after life. Yat pranatam upayada, sometimes we're up and sometimes we're down. And that's basically it. So that's all the conditioning. So part of the empowerment is that we become liberated from that conditioning. All these things gradually go away. And all the false identification goes away. One becomes free from all this false identification with all kinds of roles that we play. Maybe one day I'll get there and I realize I'm not Dutch after all. That's going to take a while. It's like, you know, no more cheese. Come on. I know, everywhere in the world they take cheese. And in Dutch, in Holland, cheese is a religion. You know? It's more than just. And it's sort of something existential. Kind of so, but all these things will disappear, all these identifications will go. And then, gradually, step by step, one gets purified, and little by little, things change. First, shraddha, adoshraddha, initial faith. You believe in it. Then, in the association of devotees, one becomes stimulated and experiences some taste of chayabhav, shadow reflection of ecstasy. Not the real thing, but a taste. And then we carry on, and we just we begin to take up a process. Start to chant a certain number of rounds, follow principles, and start to bow down, so many things. And gradually we become purified from all kinds of weaknesses and anarta, stumbling blocks in our personality. And after all that purification, we finally come to a point where we are very sure that this is really the only way. This is it. This is what I want to do with my life. There's nothing else. We are very firmly, and I'm very, very sure that all happiness comes from Krishna consciousness. Sada sapta visvaskaya sudhiranischaya Krishna bhakti kaya sabhakama kritaya. That from Krishna bhakti, all good will come. So that's an advanced stage called nista, very firm determination. At that stage you can take sannyas, a minimum entrance level for sannyas. Okay. Yeah, it says nista. But the next stage is more interesting because that is ruchi, that is taste. After that comes deep attachment, then comes ecstasy, and then comes pure love of God. Now, ruchi, or taste, is interesting because it is the stage where, well, the way I describe it is that in the beginning, it is like going into a river, a large river. So you go into the water, and first, as you're along the shore, you push yourself through the water on your own strength. You swim on the strength of your muscles. But when you go deeper into the water, you come to the point where the current just sweeps you up. That is the point of ruchi in our analogy. In the first stages of bhakti, we're pushing ourselves. We're doing it. We're chanting. We're sitting there to chant. And we have to apply ourselves. We're hearing philosophy. We apply it, we think about it, we get some good pointers from it, we use it in our life, we think, yes, my life is improving, definitely, I've gained something from it, all these kind of things. But in ruchi, something else happens. In ruchi, it's just overwhelming emotion. It's just overwhelming emotion. A current that just grabs us and drags us along, and we don't know where it's going to take us. So there it really, and that is something you cannot force, because we all know you cannot force emotions. You can be very determined and fix your mind and say, you know, I'm going to do this, and you do it. I'm going to chant, you know, I chant. Like 24 hour chanting. For sure. No, I'll do it. 24. Can do. If you are determined. But you cannot force out an emotion. That comes on its own. That's the current that comes. So in ruchi, that overwhelming emotion comes in. An overwhelming attraction to Krishna. That somehow we are drawn to him. So the first part is pushing, and the second part is where we are drawn. This stage where we are drawn is call it the tipping point. It's an important part of our transformation. So generally, and then it is said this ruchi covers the entire surface of our consciousness. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur explains. He said then in the next stage of ashakti, the stage of attachment, it goes deep under the consciousness. Now once taste is there together with deep attachment, and that translates into bhav, into great ecstasy. Yes. So we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was immediately bringing people to Bhav, at least to Chaya Bhav, but the shadow of Bhav. Right? It is said that you can get ecstasy from somebody who's ecstatic. By being with someone who's ecstatic, everything is different. Being with great devotees, being with Srila Prabhupada, everything was different. Problems disappear, one is suddenly, you know. Everything becomes, one becomes lifted above his own level. But when that personality goes, one may go back down. That's the nature of Chayabhav. Chayabhav means it's temporary. You have an experience and come back down. Chaya means shadow or reflection. So it's a reflection of the real thing. So you can get, we can borrow ecstasy from ecstatic people or ecstatic places. One can, it says one can borrow from the holy Dham. I'll give you an example. In Mayapur, we have our temple on the banks of the Ganga, and it's very large. And then there is, the Ganga is big and has many branches also. So not far from our temple, there is another branch of the Ganga. And there is a place called Mongachi, and it's a really wonderful place. It's the place of Vasudeva Dutta, who was very merciful. So it is the place of mercy. So I always go to that place to pray for mercy. So you can take, there's a canal which connects the one branch of the Ganga to the other, and you can take a boat. So we're going with this boat, and we have this rocking kirtan on the boat. And it was very nice, you know, like even everyone got into it, even the fishermen were sort of rocking on their little boats as we came by, and it was going, and on the shore people would be dancing, and we were having lots of fun. Then we go through the canal, and we're just chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, and suddenly there's this crow in the tree, and the crow in the tree, because the canal is sort of a tree on the bank, and the crow also goes Ram, Ram, with us, exactly with us, you know. It was like, wow, that crow, you know. I was looking at that crow and going, that's not an ordinary crow. That's a transcendental crow. Just look at that crow. Completely in time, you know. With us. So the Dham showed its ecstatic feature. I became twice as ecstatic when I saw that crow. You know? And in that way, one can borrow from the Dham. One can just have these transcendental experiences in the Dham, which are just really lifting us up. So Chaya Bhav, some taste can be there of Bhav. So in this case, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just extraordinary in the way he danced, he immediately lifted people up. In the Chaitanya Sikhsamrita, which is a book written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has analyzed how much a Vaishnava can empower other people. And he says, one who has nista, who is really firmly fixed, like I described, the entrance level for sannyas, right? One who's firmly fixed, he can give people shraddha. He can give people shraddha. It is said, one who has bhav, who is ecstasy, can give people ruchi. It is said, one who has ecstasy can give people taste. Immediately, just even ordinary people who have no taste can suddenly be taken to a level where taste becomes very predominant, not just a little, but really like very predominant, and it can even become permanent. But then, and it says, one who is on the level of praying can even lift people up to his own level. Yeah. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, now acting as a human being. He was acting as a devotee, Bhakta Rupa, teaching by example. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was, somehow or other, bringing these people to levels of ecstasy which were just extraordinary. Extraordinary. We see that sometimes devotees are empowering. There's the story of Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur was a famous follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who would just chant virtually non-stop. Right? We chant like 300,000 names. 16 rounds is 25,000 names, so one can do the mathematics himself. But Haridas was chanting 300,000 names. We do 25,000 a day. So he was every day and night chanting. So he did this in various places. One place where he chanted for a long time is Benapol. So Benapol is in Bangladesh these days. It is not far from the Indian border. It's the first place you come after the Indian border. So I was going there, and I had sort of, before going there, meditated on what I would do there. So I thought, I'm going to chant a lot of rounds, and I'm going to pray to Haridas Thakur to empower me, you know, to give me the strength, to give me the strength to chant, to give me the inspiration to chant, to give me happiness in chanting, so that, because when you're happy, then, you know, you're empowered. So all these kind of reflections were going through my mind as we were going there. When we came to Benapol, I was a little bit taken aback, because next to, there was a deity of Haridas Thakur, and next to the deity of Haridas Thakur, not so close, but at some distance, there was the deity of a lady, which was Laksahira, the prostitute, who had come to Haridas. It was Haridas was chanting and chanting, and everyone was just starting to worship Haridas and respect Haridas. So one local zamindar or landowner, who was kind of wealthy, influential, and so on, was, you know, seeing that Haridas was getting a lot more respect than him. It's like getting a little bit too much. Therefore, he kind of arranged it that some prostitute would go there in the dead of night and tell Haridas how much she loved him and that she really couldn't live without him anymore. And she wanted him. She wanted to be united with him. And so on. And Haridas saw her coming and said that, yes, no problem. That's fine. But I first have to finish my rounds. I've taken this vow of 300,000 names. There's a lot of rounds. I'm not finished yet today, so you'll have to wait till I finish my rounds. I will enjoy with you, but first I must finish my rounds. And the first night he just couldn't complete the whole vow yet, so he said, well, come back tomorrow. And it took three nights, and after the third night, it said she had become purified. She had become transformed, and she confessed that she had been sent there and so on to corrupt him, and she begged forgiveness, and she begged for instructions. And Haridas told her to give away whatever opulence she got, because she got it from sinful life. So distribute that to the brahmanas, get rid of it, and come back. Then she came back,
Then she shaved her head and was in one cloth and big cloth and one big cloth, well covered, and then she also started chanting 300,000 names a day.
Okay.
Now, it's not possible to chant 300,000 names on a conviction, right? Maybe one day, possibly, if someone has an exceptional nature, you know, if you have like an incredibly strong willpower, and you can chant fast as well, then you could possibly chant 300,000 names in one day. If you can stay awake that long, it's intense, and that would be it. Right? After that, I don't know what would happen the next day. Imagine you chant 300,000 names one day. The next day, you eat 3 liters of ice cream or something. I don't know, but it would be such an intense thing on the mind, right? Such a concentration that the next day you would just need to relax and do something crazy. You know? But no, the next day again and again and again, the same intense focus. It's not possible to chant 300,000 names every day unless one is in ecstasy, unless one has actual love of God. Therefore, when I came there and I saw that murti, that form of the prostitute as well, it suddenly dawned upon me that Haridas had transformed the prostitute. He had completely transformed that prostitute from a lusty lady because, mind you, when the prostitute was hired, the prostitute, she was ready to do the job, no problem. And the man, the zamindar, the district authority, said that he would send his constable with her, and as soon as she would have union with Haridas, he would arrest Haridas. Right? That was the plan for it. You know. And she said, no. You sent your constable with me the second night, not the first night. So that shows that she had more than professional interest. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, you know, just the first night. Right? No, she had more than professional interest. There was lust involved. Therefore, Lakshahira was the emblem of lust, the personification of lust. And I tell you, when I came and saw that murti, all the prayers that I had preconceived, they all went out of the window. And instead of praying for the power to chant many rounds and so on, I prayed to become free from lust. I said, like, that would be, you know, and I suddenly thought, that's even better. I mean, that's sort of like, that's even a bigger problem. Yeah? Once I'm free from lust, then that chanting, yes, that will there'll be no problem. It is the lust that is the problem. So that was very amazing. So this empowerment we saw meant not only, it's not only something ethereal, but actually becoming free from lust. It's that lust that whips us. They speak about whips of material existence. Hunger, thirst, lamentation. But it's basically lust in different forms, driving us along. The tongue wanting to taste. The skin wanting to touch. Right? Looking everywhere. We are experts. At a glance, we can just at one glance, we can place someone. Yeah? Just like you see someone walking in the street, just scanning street. One glance, you know. Okay.
you figured out how old she is, what she looks like, what she does, you know, and everything in one glance, or the boy is saying, in one glance, we can figure it out. I mean, that's how sometimes the one glance is so good if we want a second glance, that's another thing. But this lust is just amazing. It is just amazing how it rules everything. Right? How it rules every aspect of life. How it's just always present, constantly. It's just constantly with us, every single moment. And we got used to it, but that's sort of part of life. And it doesn't matter how bright the saffron is, or, you know, or how big the danda is, right? Since he said 20 years sannyas, it doesn't matter. Even after 20 years sannyas, one has to be careful. You're walking on a tightrope. And, you know, and there are people down there, and some are waiting for you to fall. You know, some hope you're gonna fall. I knew it. Confirm. I knew he wasn't gonna make it. Yeah, that's definitely the case. But as we're walking on that tightrope, when there's love, then it's not narrow. Then it becomes wide, like a highway, like a royal road. Then one can easily walk there. But when there's lust, immediately. When the love goes down, when the love goes for the things of this material world, then the path, the spiritual path, is a tightrope, extremely narrow. This is impossible. How can anyone do this to himself? You know, this guy should fall down just to prove that it's impossible and that he's a symbol of, you know, of something unnatural. Yeah? After about 2 months, after I took sannyas, I was in Italy and someone asked me the question. And the question was, some lady asked the question and said, how do we know that you're not going to fall down? That's just it. And I was a little bit like, I said, you please pray for me.
That's what I asked.
So I ask the same to all of you also. Please pray for me that I may get some love so that the cord will be wide as a royal road. So this is liberation. When one's free from lust, it's a Saturday night. It's a Saturday night, and I ain't meet nobody. What a relief, you know? Yeah, it's great.
Just simple.
So, therefore, empowerment goes both ways. It's liberating us from all these lower material things that make us do so many crazy things, and it awakens in us deep spiritual taste, deep happiness. How can we understand that famous handbill of Srila Prabhupada that he brought with him on the Jaladutta, which showed him with the corners of his mouth really down, right? And Yadurani, who was a painter, when she saw it, right, she said, oh, you know, you must have been very unhappy, right, when that picture was taken. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, that was my greatest moment of ecstasy. How can one understand? Not the little bubbly, giggly, you know, ecstasy.
Uh-huh.
When Prabhupada came to Amsterdam, what happened there is they had invited him to come and install Jagannath. After he had agreed to come, they got kicked out of the temple because they were living in some flat and they were having too many spices, and it went into the exhaust system, and people traced it back to the extraterrestrials on the thing. And they were on the street. So they had no place, but they didn't want to cancel Prabhupada's visit. Right? What to do? So they're desperately looking for a place. Everywhere, everywhere. They couldn't find the place. Finally, there was this place. It was just a warehouse. And there were street tiles on the floor, not even floorboards. There were no windows, just some roof lights, and a vegetable storage. That's what it was. Anyway, they took it. Yeah? They got the wood of a building site, sort of, at night. And anyway, got the wooden floor in, everything. That much they got ready. And so on, and then Prabhupada came. Prabhupada walks in and says, "What is this place? Is this the temple?" "Yes, Sri Prabhupada, this is the temple." "Am I going to install the deities here?" And everything went wrong in the installation. Everything. See, one person had carved Jagannath and someone else had built the altar. But the one that made Jagannath had come to the wood shop and had found a bigger block than was planned, and it made Jagannath bigger than he had originally planned. Never told the guy who made the altar. So, those are complications. When Prabhupada asked for fruit, you know, the lady went to the kitchen and she never came back. Now that's something that drives anybody nuts, right? You send someone and they don't come back. He sent someone after her, and that person also didn't come back. So, is extremely annoying. I know how it feels. So I sympathize that Prabhupada is getting a little, what's going on here? And just then, finally she comes, and instead of fruit, she brings fruit salad. So Prabhupada looks at the fruits were meant for the sacrifice, you know, for the yajna. He's supposed to decorate it with fruits, right? So she brings fruit salad. Prabhupada looks at it with disgust and says, "That's useless." She all in tears and all drama. Now, for this event, the Dutch television was there and they were filming it all. And it was about 2 months after the Maharishi Yogi had been there, all bubbly and all giggly and all ecstatic. And here was the Hare Krishna guru. And he was angry. He was outright upset. Yeah? Everything was wrong, and he was on people's case, and he made them cry on television. That was just outright. It was just too much. And all this was going on, you know. And it said that then, you know. But that anger impressed some people. Some people could see he cares. He cares about Krishna, he cares about the deity. And he doesn't care about the TV. I know. I mean, he was, it showed. So some people became his followers because of his anger. Yeah. They could see it was real. He cared about Krishna. So what can we say? It also said in that particular event, one other thing that happened was there was one boy, he had an anger problem. And the devotees had told him, whenever he was getting angry, to just chant. Chant. So he raises his hand, and Prabhupada said, "Yes." And he says, then the boy says, "Why are you so angry? Just chant Hare Krishna." And Prabhupada put his hand in his feedback and started chanting. I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah. Anyway, so only all the qualities that exist here in a lower feature, these qualities also exist in relation to Krishna. Except for envy, it is said. Envy is the one quality that hasn't got its perfected state. So as we are becoming more and more happy, it's not the kind of, you know, bubblegum happiness. You know, it's not the kind, it's not pink, it's not like, it's not Disney World, it's not like, and now we're in a spiritual Disney World, and we're so happy with Mickey Mouse. It's not that, right? It's not that. It's rather, it's very deep. It can be very calm. It doesn't need to be bubbly. It can be actually a happiness that is it's very serious. Sometimes very light. Sometimes joking. Other times very, very serious. All these moods can shift. And they shifted in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from one moment to the next. And they shifted in the devotees from one moment to the next. So it is about love. And love is not plastic. Right? Love is not pink. Right? For God's sake. Right? Love. No, I'm talking about brown cherries, right? Although it's orange these days. Pink is out. But love is deeply compassionate. Love is very seriously caring about all the suffering of all the people in the world and wanting to relieve it. Love has no boundaries. Love has no limits. Love doesn't stop with your own child and the kid from next door is a monster. Go away. Good Jesus. Horrible creature. Yeah? No. Love is all embracing. It's personal. It has the full range of emotions. It's not flat, right? Nicely glossed over to samsara. How are you? Happy. Always happy. You know, that's disgusting. Excuse me. As I told you earlier, by conditioning, I'm Dutch, and we are known to be blunt also. Besides that, we eat cheese. We are very straight. So what can I do? I'm sorry. Just if someone feels offended, don't take it serious. It was said with love. I don't know where this lecture is going. It's a very serious lecture, honestly speaking, because really this is such a wonderful thing, right? This Krishna consciousness. It is totally selfless. Yeah. It is really where one sees that the greatest happiness is in giving. In giving oneself fully for the happiness of others. Yeah. And then But this cannot be done artificially. If we do this prematurely and we start to prematurely just, you know, ignore our own needs and just give everything for others, then we'll have a nervous breakdown or what another variety of breakdown. But when it comes really naturally out of love, then one can just give, and one can see. This is what Prabhupada embodied. He never became tired. He didn't become tired from, boy, that was a hell of a day. I don't recall anybody, right, who ever caught Prabhupada saying, boy, that was a hell of a day. It was always an ecstatic day, somehow or other. Because although it was hard work, but even when he was tired, extremely tired, even then, if an opportunity would come, all the fatigue would go, and he would go again with renewed enthusiasm, even when he was extremely ill, somehow or other, high fever. He managed, for the sake of preaching, in Vrindavan he was extremely ill during the opening, but somehow or other, went through. Going to London, Prabhupada was in Mayapur. His sister, she was a cook, and his sister, she wanted to cook for him. And the devotees were afraid of her cooking because she would fry everything in Bengali mustard oil or motor oil or whatever kind of oil they use. She would fry it in this oil, and then so Prabhupada ate the kachoris, right? And then, you know, about an hour later, he got really sick, and he says, my sister, she tried to poison me. And then, he got dysentery, and he was really ill. And for days, it was going on. And then, finally, he told his devotees, call my sister. And the devotees, your sister? Not your sister, no. I called her, and Prabhupada told her to cook eggplant sabji with the puri, all fried. And no. Everyone thought, this is going to be the end. And then she served it, Prabhupada ate it, and then he said, my mother always gave us eggplant sabji and puri whenever we had dysentery. So it works like that. Whatever your mother gave you as a child, that sort of works. I have experience. Should I go off on another story? I could. You have to remember the first story. What's my first story? Prabhupada's story. I'll finish the Prabhupada's story first. And Prabhupada went to... after that, he went to London. And when he came to London, in England, on the way from the airport, he had to get out of the car because his stomach was upset. And then they continued. And that's the famous Rath Yatra in London in 1973, when Prabhupada didn't want to sit on the chariot, and when he danced the whole way in front of the Jagannath Rath Yatra chariot. The whole way. Just on the strength of ecstasy, he just transcended that state of being totally ill. And anybody else would have been, my God, what I just went through, my sister cooked a kachori, I'll tell you a whole story about that. Right? But Prabhupada just transcended it all. Not on the strength of philosophy, not on the strength that he was like seeing it all, I'm not the body, I'm eternal spirit soul. No. Just on the ecstasy of like being there with Lord Jagannath in London, going into the city to Trafalgar Square, right? A victory march through London. Prabhupada, London, you know, like British India, London, London, London. His whole education in British tradition. And then being in London, going there and going to that square and taking Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there to that square. That was so ecstatic that he just forgot everything. And as he forgot it, the soul is said is million times more powerful than the sun in terms of energy. What can a little disease in the body, what can old age, what can all these things do? And Prabhupada just rose above it and was just totally transcendental and empowered there in that moment of the action. And that was just, he ran up and down to the chariot, right? And the police, you know, they always want chariots when you have a parade, they wanted to move, you know. The cops came and said, and they looked at the biggest devotee, which happened to be Brahmana, and the size, and told him, tell the old man to move. And Brahmananda looked from Prabhupada
to the cop.
And he was thinking, who he was fearing the most. And it was Prabhupada. Right? So then, you know, then the cop got really aggressive. Right? Challenge them! So, okay, then he turned around. He told Prabhupada, the police wants you to move. And Prabhupada just looked at him. And Brahmananda became the size of a mouse. And that was it. No one could stop Prabhupada. Yeah? No one could stop him from running up and down in front of the chariot and stopping the chariot and jumping. It was Prabhupada's great moment of ecstasy. And Krishna reciprocated and even took over the newspaper, and the newspaper wrote, like, you know, on Trafalgar Square, I was just recently there. It's a very... There is on one side, I was there for Rati Yatra, on one side there is a raised portion, a raised platform. And on that raised platform, the three chariots stand. So they don't stand on the ground, they're off the ground. They're like, you know, at least, I don't know, 15 feet up, something like that. And then on the other side of the square is Nelson's column. Right? So, you know, the papers got it and they wrote, you know, chariot rivals Nelson's column. And that was just Krishna. So we can see in this empowerment, it's not just that the devotee gets the power, it is just Krishna is with him. Krishna cooperates with him. The devotee gets the power, but Krishna also arranges things around him and is there and is with him. Yeah? And thus, the newspaper wrote exactly what Prabhupada wanted to hear, right? And what Prabhupada needed to tell the world, you know, Rathkar rivals Nelson's column. Even the newspaper was ecstatic. See, everyone was getting ecstatic. So in this way, everyone became empowered. And we can see how those first kirtans of Lord Chaitanya that swept people up didn't just go through South India. They went through the centuries and they came here to New York City, to this Tompkins Square Park, where I was just this morning, because it's just Krishna arranged it that this place is right next to Tompkins Square Park, where there is the tree. There's no doubt about it. And then that kirtan came here, and from here, from under that, from matchless gifts and under the tree, it spread everywhere, and now it comes back here again, in waves going up and down everywhere, and sweeping up everything, and that is empowerment. Okay, I have talked for a long So if someone would like to respond and bring up a comment or a question, that would be nice. This empowerment is really something. It's not just, you get the power, you get the mystic power. You chant Hare Krishna for, 1 year, and you will see, you're going to become enlightened, all kinds of. You'll be able to read minds and levitate, and, has nothing to do with all these things. Real empowerment actually means, is very simple. It means happy beyond happiness, beyond yourself. That's what empowerment means. And that's actually normal. That's actually what we're supposed to be. If you think about it, that's what everyone is supposed to. So this empowerment is actually putting us back into our natural position. It's not like you become empowered, you become supernatural. No. Actually, finally become natural. Now we are dim reflections of ourselves.
Ghost-like creatures walking down the streets of the cities of the world.
Trying to squeeze out some juice of life. That sounds a little gloomy, but I have to compensate for all the jokes. So, we've got to cover the whole room. So, anyone's got a question now?
You talked about empowerment, and in doing Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, Lord devotees were being empowered by his presence. So some of us, we live in the cities, we're busy with our lives and jobs and things like that. So what kind of mood, or what kind of qualifications and moods we should cultivate in order to feel empowered so that we can chant and experience similar kind of happiness or bliss, ecstatic ecstasy you talked about in our, regular sadhana practice.
Yeah. Well, earlier in the lecture, I spoke about that this process, that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, the people all became empowered in a moment to extreme heights. But that generally for us it's a process, a step-by-step process. When we're in the earlier stages, we're looking for strength, we're looking for inspiration, determination to do these things. Right? And at that time, we need a lot. We're desperately looking for inspiration. So we can get it. We can get it from, as said, from great personalities or from the holy dhams, saintly, the places where Krishna appeared in the form of his pastimes. So these one great personality who is still very much present is Srila Prabhupada in so many ways. He's still, as soon as we turn to him, turn to his books, or turn to remembrance of him, remembering pastimes of his life, the movie is now playing in some theater somewhere. I don't know which theater, which one.
It's over?
Yeah. Shame. Anyway, such is it. It will come back. Anyway. Anyway, so as soon as we turn to Prabhupada, even sometimes just turn on a little clip, a video on YouTube, that inspiration is there. So he can still give us inspiration. Then we can look at others, devotees who can give us inspiration. All devotees can give us inspiration. There are inspired devotees. We look for them. If you want inspiration, you have to beg, borrow, and steal. You can't just sort of wait. Well, you know, I think usually on Saturdays there is some inspiration coming, you know, everything, so you sort of, you can't schedule it in. You have to really be eager. It's the eagerness that will, then we'll find it. You have to hunt for it. There it will come. There you will find it. Anyway, you already know because you drove 8 hours to come here. That's pretty eager. Okay, I'm done. Thank you so much. It's very nice. Thank you for doing that.